TED Audio Collective.
Good morning, Francis.
Good morning, my love. Let me just begin with, I apologize.
Yeah, you know, that's a much better way to start.
I had this cold first.
Yeah, listeners might note that your voice is free and clear right now.
Yes, yeah.
Mine a little less so.
Yeah, my apologies.
Yeah, accepted. I do feel like I'm looking into my future.
You are.
And it's a little brighter.
The future's bright.
It's a little brighter. So I want to talk about hustle culture.
Oh, yeah.
Before we get started, because I feel like this phenomenon and then its bad reputation can sometimes muddy the speed conversation.
Yeah.
So what is hustle culture, Francis, and how is it different from a sense of urgency or a sense of moving fast and fixing things?
Yeah. So hustle culture is indiscriminate. So
yeah.
Everything has to go fast. And I think the famous saying is that if everything is urgent, nothing is urgent. That's hustle culture. It's also, in my experience, an infinite game of addressing symptoms and never addressing the cause.
Yeah.
And so hustle culture is just this breathlessness of activity. And when you look back in retrospect, you haven't really made very much progress, but boy, were you busy along the way.
Yeah. You were running around in the proverbial circle instead of moving forward.
Whereas a culture of urgency is very discriminate. It's, we're going to work on these things, not those things. It's really radical prioritization of what we're going to work on. And we should work with most urgency on our most important problems.
Yeah.
Hustle culture doesn't discern between most important and least important.
Yeah, yeah. I find a tell that you're getting it right is that people feel a sense of relief.
Yes.
Because you're making progress and you're making it clear that the status quo is unacceptable.
So when we think about speed, we always want to think about prioritization too. And so that's a little tease for today's conversation.
I'm Ann Morris. I'm a company builder and leadership coach.
And I'm Frances Fry. I'm a Harvard Business School professor and I'm Ann's wife.
This is Fixable from the TED Audio Collective. On this show, we believe that meaningful change happens fast, anything is fixable, and good solutions are usually just a single brave conversation away.
Who do we have today, Ann?
Francis, we have a fantastic caller today. Let's listen to the voicemail.
Hey, Ann and Francis, this is Caroline calling. My question is, how do we go faster internally as a business? To back up a bit, we are about a 50-person business. We more than doubled in size last year. We're growing at a great rate, but we still think we could go faster internally. I actually gifted our team your new book as a holiday gift. Would love to talk about this with you if it's of interest.
First of all, her instincts are excellent.
Oh my gosh, for the gift-giving season? I think that's a generalizable lesson.
This is one of our favorite conversations. I have some follow-up questions around the logic of the speed. What are we trying to achieve with it?
Yeah, and the thing I very much like about the question is, as we get bigger, how do we go faster? Because in general, when we get bigger, we add more bureaucracy and we go slower. But those are diseconomies of scale.
Right.
We want economies of scale. And so she really is getting at the, how can we make our size play to our advantage, not our disadvantage? So I love going after, how can we go faster when we're doubling in size?
Love it. Let's get into it.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Hey everybody, it's Neil. I've got some huge news. Decoder is moving to Mondays and Thursdays. We're adding a second episode of the show. On Mondays, we'll have our classic interviews with CEOs and other troublemakers.
I think we're going to have to start having conversations about how do we pay those jobs that can't be done by AI.
And on Thursdays, we'll be explaining big topics in the news with Verge reporters, experts, and other friends of the show.
There's a new generation of people on the internet. Google search has always sucked for them. So, you know, there's no reason for them to be loyal. They can just go to TikTok.
This is going to be really fun. I'm very excited about all this. So go subscribe wherever you get your podcasts now.
Caroline, welcome to Fixable.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
So we listened to your voicemail, and speed and momentum are issues very, very close to our heart and two variables we think a lot about, hugely important in any adventure in organizational change. But before we get there, I want to make sure that we capture some of the context here so that we can be more helpful. So let's start with the business itself. Tell us a little bit about what you all are up to.
We are a software platform that allows companies and organizations to book desks and spaces. So if you think about a workplace or a community or an educational space that has more people than desks or spaces that are used for specific venues, we have a software platform that allows people to book those desks and reserve them in advance so that they can maximize the utilization of their resources.
This is a growing industry in our increasingly hybrid world, I imagine.
Yes. Hybrid work has been a huge growth lever for this business. And we continue to see people obviously interested in refining their approach to hybrid work. And so coming to us as they put in new policies or as they refine existing policies.
Nice. And what is your role in the machine of this organization?
I am the VP of People and Operations. So I lead all things people and talent and think a lot about everything that is the internal workings of the company. How do we make decisions? How do we talk about those decisions? How do we communicate across the team?
And how long have you been there?
Since last June.
Okay. So that's less than a year?
Less than a year.
Okay.
Yes.
There's a lot on your plate. How big is your team?
I actually just hired my first direct report this week. Before that, I did it myself. But we currently, across the company, have 56 employees. We're in 14 different countries around the globe. And we hired 17 people between the beginning of the fourth quarter and today. So a lot of that growth has happened in the last year, which I think will be an important component of this conversation.
Yeah, let's start there. How is the company metabolizing that growth? And how are you doing with it?
I did a lot of recruiting in the fourth quarter. I did every first round interview. And so I did a lot of calls for us to end up with 17 great people joining the team. The company so far is metabolizing the growth quite well. I think one of the things I've been proud of, especially with where we see a lot of other tech companies right now, is we very much have hired for the growth that we need today. A lot of times candidates will ask me, when are you looking for this hire to start, right? And my answer is always today, yesterday, as soon as you can be here. That's obviously a source of pride, sort of given our growth. But I think it's also something that makes every hire very pressing, right? The pressure is certainly on.
Has revenue grown at a commensurate pace?
We have been really happy with our revenue growth. And a lot of the teams that have been added are to further the platform, right? So to add to the platform horizontally or to sort of further the sales effort of the team.
All right. That sounds like things are going pretty well. So where and why do you want to go faster?
We have checked the boxes in a lot of, I don't want to say the easy ways, because it's not that hiring is easy or adding resources to people's teams is easy, whether that's new tools or technology or people. But I think we don't necessarily feel the internal human capital flywheel going as fast as we would like it to. And as I was getting ready for this conversation, I was trying to think of where are the examples if we're still going slow. And it feels like we're getting faster, but it still doesn't feel as fast as past companies I've been a part of. And that's sort of the problem that we're looking to tackle.
We'll leave it in the I know it when I feel it category for now. but what is the cost of that delta?
I think from a business perspective, we work in an increasingly competitive workplace, right? There are other platforms that do what we do. And for us to stay and continue to have the growth that we want, whether it's new products or make decisions quickly internally, has a real impact on our ability to stay ahead of the competition.
And it's your sense that people aren't operating with a sense of urgency?
I don't know that I would say that as a blanket statement. I definitely know people that have lots of urgency that are here. I think it's more the how people are working cross-functionally. I don't know that we're there yet mm-hmm. in terms of us moving fast. And then I was thinking about, you know, if you're an engineer working on our team in Europe, do you feel the momentum that the marketing team in Boston has? Maybe not, right? If I think about past companies that I've worked at where there was a sense of momentum, a lot of that was in person and in the same office. You could feel the momentum from sales, even if you weren't working in sales, because you would hear the sales gong going all the time, or you would hear about the new logo that they closed in the lunch line or something like that. You don't have that in a remote setting. And so my worry is that people don't sense the momentum that others have and are losing the ability to be energized by that momentum that is happening across the company, but might not be seen.
Can you think of an example of when you saw this tension or felt that tension?
I think there are probably team members that have the perception that they're working so hard and they're the hardest working people on the team. And I think that's easy to say when you're sort of isolated, right? And you see your own very hard work.
You don't see your competitors to know how fast they're going.
Right. You don't see how fast others are going or maybe how efficient others are going, right? It might just be showing up in very different ways of sort of how much impact somebody is having. And that's probably an example where I would see somebody not having the visibility of like, oh, these other teams are actually going really, really fast. I just don't have visibility into that. And I don't think we're so slow that it's not a catastrophic problem. I think it's more of look at how exquisite this could be, right? Mm. We've hired all these new, incredibly talented people. We've added more resources across those teams to make them really be able to do the best work of their careers. And so the detriment isn't necessarily that, oh, I think this company is going to fail if we don't go faster by tomorrow. I think it's more, if we do go faster, we can achieve so much more in the year or in the next couple of years.
Got it. So it's really in the opportunity cost right now.
Yes.
Do other people around you share this concern?
So this current concern was brought up by our CEO to the senior leadership team in October. And his challenge to all of us was, you know, how do we go faster? I think we've gotten incrementally faster since then, right? That was a couple months ago. But I still don't think we're sitting and looking around and saying, wow, this is the fastest place I've ever worked. We are really all, you know, rowing in the same direction, flying the same playbook, whatever analogy you would want to use.
Yeah. So I want to know what the company has done since the CEO's mandate in October, what you've tried.
Some of the things that have happened in the past couple of months to give us a greater sense of moving faster has been teams simply doing a better job sharing what they, in some cases, were already doing. So our marketing team, for example, did a great job of sharing a lot more of the A-B tests they're running on our website. And they're running new A-B tests every week. And so sharing that, not just the tests that they're running, but also at the end of the week, right, here's the result, here's what we're going to do next week, here's how we're iterating on that, was a great way of showcasing how they're moving faster and how they're iterating faster. And I think creating a sense of momentum of what that team is working on.
Awesome. And what have you done personally on your team?
I hired 17 people. one of the things that we instituted last year that I think continues to have an impact is we, for the first time, had an all-company meeting where we're sharing cross-functionally what each of the departments are working on. Currently, we do that meeting quarterly, and I think there's an opportunity to potentially share more frequently than that. But that has been a helpful way, obviously, to witness some of the momentum that other functions are doing is by joining that meeting and sort of seeing what other teams are doing. And we see great attendance in that meeting. And those that can't attend, watch the recording.
Great. All right, Francis, where are we?
an awesome company with an amazing head of people and ops. Let me just begin there. That has a lot of the basic blocking and tackling done and wants to go faster. So what we call a very high quality problem. And what you've done since having this as a mandate are is what we would call some very standard techniques. So one thing you did, I'll just put some language on it, but you added what we call operational transparency. And that is, that's your communication. And they're talking about the A/B testing for the websites and just making it visible. What's amazing about operational transparency is you don't have to change the operations. You just be transparent about it. And people's perception of it goes up and the speed of it goes up. So operational transparency is like a miracle. You just make things visible and all of the metrics get better. So that one's great. With the hiring, the language we would use for that is that you added resources to the bottleneck function. What I mean by that is whatever is constraining capacity, whatever is the limiting step, we call it a bottleneck, and it's the thing that's limiting the flow. And when you add resources, mistakes organizations make is that they add resources to non-bottleneck steps, and then they wonder why nothing got better. And the only way things get better is if you make that particular bottleneck step wider. So that's the other classic thing you did that makes a lot of sense. There are a bunch of others that I think when we get into the solutions, what we're going to do is ask you to try them on and see if there aren't a few candidates from the other toolkit, the speed toolkit. But I think that's what we're going to get to, and it feels like it'll be a very optimistic exploration.
Does that sound right, Carolyn?
Yeah, that's great.
Great. Yeah, so we're about to get the engines of the fixable train fire. I see my wife's pulse quickening over there. Why don't you keep going?
All right.
So now I'm just going to started.
So I'm just going to give you some, and you just snag the ones that you want to double click on. So,
perfect.
In general, when the pace of decision making is slow, we find that too few people have been empowered to make decisions. And so the decision maker has become a bottleneck. When the decision maker has become the bottleneck, what we need to do is empower more people. That's a way to add resources to the bottleneck function by just giving more people decision rights. Now, you don't want to give people decision rights that go beyond their capacity, but that's one thing. We have to empower more people to make more decisions.
Does that ring true for your context?
It rings true, as in I intellectually agree with it. I'm wondering how to implement it in our case.
Here's just a quick test. Where are the decisions most maddeningly slow for you, for the organization, like in your observation?
I think there's a couple pockets where they're conspicuously slow and where giving decision rights to somebody around a specific area could be impactful. The bottleneck probably is, and I'm assuming this is not atypical, but at the senior leadership level, sort of a lot of decisions are still coming to the top, rather than now that we've hired some of those mid-level managers, empowering them to make the decisions around their functions.
And you just said the magic word. So if we're going to give a label to each one of these, this is empowerment. If your organization is like other organizations, they're going to be slow to empower these new folks. And what we would say is that you don't learn very much by going slow. This is a learning by doing sport. So practice with the empowerment and get better at it. Don't wait for this magical seasoning to occur.
I was actually thinking about the new hire that I just hired earlier this week, who's helping me with some of the recruiting projects we are continuing to hire sort of the beginning of this year. And I think there's projects where I could have, instead of asking for her help, given her ownership over some either projects or parts of a project more discreetly and letting her run with it and then coming back.
It's
a gorgeous example.
It's a gorgeous example because she will be a better, more helpful leader more quickly with the latter. And it's so understandable to want to go like super slow in the process, but it's fast experimentation is what leads to it. So that was a gorgeous example.
And you can add some safety nets. So in the future, you'll just say, here's the ball, run. But in this first project, it's here's the ball, run a couple feet, circle back, get my input, run a couple more feet. So there's some artificial constraints in this first round, but she's still clearly getting the ball. And the reframing you just offered was really powerful. But this is a moment of reflection for you, Caroline, to think of, okay, what was in the way? What was in the way of me doing this in the first place? Is it just habit? Is it a culture of risk aversion around me? Bringing on a new hire is an awesome time to kind of reflect on your own patterns
and what's
as
gonna,
a manager.
What's going to make you an awesome messenger to everyone else is you did it yourself and you get to reflect on it. And if you give transparency to your reflection, you will accelerate other people doing it.
Francis, what else is on your magic list?
If you are going to empower people, and that's what this one is, it's really important to give people a budget line item. And so I'm going to give you examples for this, but even if the line item is $10, it's amazing how just being able to have a small discretionary budget can make a world of difference. So there are high-end hotels who will often have employees that will never be able to afford staying at those very, very high-end hotels. And so they don't have any shared experience with which to serve the customers, but they're trained to do anticipatory service, like to really go above and beyond in delight. And they're given just small budgets to do things. So let me give you one example. A 21-year-old employee saw this very fancy family, and one of their children was very sad because he lost his Thomas the Train. And this was at like 9 o'clock at night. By 7 o'clock the next morning, this 21-year-old employee was not only giving a Thomas the Train to this client, but also had taken photographs of Thomas the Train at the sandwich station, at the pool, and said, oh, Thomas was enjoying his things. Now, he had to go out and buy a Thomas the Train. And if he had to get approval for that, it was overnight, he never would have gotten it. So now their budget, their line item, I think, was $15. That was the discretion that people had to spend.
So I think, Francis, you were pointing out the power of the line item as an empowerment signal to people.
Yes.
And the line item meaning, if I'm getting your point right, you don't just have discretionary control over your time or like your focus, but over the resources of the company, which is a really powerful empowerment signal. So at the Great Ritz-Carlton, that number is pretty high. So it's $2,000 per employee. Any employee on the Ritz-Carlton payroll can spend up to $2,000 to solve any customer problem. So what we will often challenge companies on this one is what's that number for you? Because we'll work with healthcare companies and they're like, look at our margins. We can't pot. That's a ridiculous number. What would $20 mean? What would $2 mean for your employees to be able to buy a family a cup of coffee on the worst fucking day of their lives? And what would it mean to your employees to have this policy on the books, which is to signal this is the business, sir, and we are in the business of being service to our customers. And your job, your mandate is to do whatever it takes to achieve that mission.
And it can't be an exception to get reimbursed. You just have to know you can do it and you don't have to get approval for it. And whatever that is, then let the creativity soar.
Yeah, I like the way that it's, I think the point that you made about it not being a, can I get reimbursed, but sort of giving someone the license of just, you can go ahead and make the decision and we will trust that you made the decision. Yeah, I've always admired the, I don't know if they still have it, but the former Netflix travel policy was just be responsible. And it's interesting how it motivated very different behavior than early in my career when I worked in investment banking and you could expense up to $25 for dinner. You could bet that every night.
$24.99.
We got very good at that. Exactly.
Awesome. Yeah. All right,
okay, so here's another
one. Talk us through it, baby.
So what I've talked about is how to make it better for all things, like how to increase the pace. But sometimes you want to make it faster for some things. And so we want a systematic way to fast track projects. And usually those projects receive names. And they almost always have healthcare names. Is that
Etsy called them ambulances.
Yeah,
Etsy. Which it's an unfortunate metaphor, but it makes the point. Like, these are the projects that can speed ahead of everyone else because they are more urgent and need attention faster.
And what's important, just similar to the last one, is you don't decide how to put in place an ambulance project. You have it in place. We know that there will sometimes be ambulance projects, and we have the process in place, and now we will simply identify them occasionally. So one thing is, if you are in an environment where that's going to be needed, let's have a well-understood process for how to do it. So create a way to fast-track projects.
Yeah, if you're looking for inspiration on names, I think at Stripe they call them Project Yellow projects.
Great. Okay, here's another one. This one, if we were going to give the label first, it's ruthless prioritization. And the most important part of ruthless prioritization is not just saying what are the things that are most important, it's removing things from the list. If we looked at all of the work in process of any organization today, we look at all the projects they're doing, and we looked at the capacity of their people, they have more projects than people. Every organization does. And what they think is, we're just going to buckle down and try harder. And what they really should do is figure out which are the ones that are not important, not that we're going to do later, that we're not going to do. Organizations have to learn to stop doing things. And that they were a good idea when we started, but just because we started it doesn't mean it remains a good idea right now. But the momentum of doing it, the putting it on somebody's to-do list, like the organizational whirlwind around our to-dos, makes it really hard to take one off unless it's been completed. So ruthless prioritization is what's the most important, but what is so low important and is never going to be higher importance, and it's actually consuming resources to even be in the queue. So let me ask if that has any resonance.
I guess a follow-up question.
Yeah.
It does. And I think I think about sort of my never-ending to-do list, wish list for this quarter, list for a day, you know, a future day.
I count five lists.
I mean, at least. I have paper lists. I have online lists. I have all the dream projects and ideas, some of which I'm sure would be, especially from the people side, right? There's always.
You know,
great things that we could implement internally, culturally, that would have an impact. I'm always tempted to put it on the next quarter, next week, wish list. How do you combat that thinking? Because that is...
So there's the no, and there's the not now. And what you just said, and this is why you're going to be a beautiful messenger once you internalize it to everyone else. To your point, it's so much more tempting to just say, I'll do that one later. I'll do it later. I'll do it later. And what we really should do is say no. So... I have a friend who's always very busy, and she's a very in-demand speaker. And the rule that she says is, if I'm not willing to go give this talk tomorrow, even if it's being asked for in a year, I'm going to say no to it. Because she keeps having these things. She's like, I cannot believe I said yes to this. And it's to your point, it's the, we have some view that there's going to be a mythical Slack-filled place in the future that's going to just have all of this excess time to do these things. The future is going to be at least as grim in terms of demands tomorrow as it is today, at least as grim. So the putting off is actually a fantasy that gets us to not practice ruthless prioritization.
And the mental cue in the back of your mind is still spinning.
Yes. Because here's the thing, there's going to be new ideas that come up next quarter, and I want you to be able to do those. I don't want you to have to do the, you know, fifth and sixth priority from this quarter, next quarter. I want you to do one and two next quarter of what those current contexts brought up.
Caroline, do you have one of these lists nearby?
I do.
Let's pull it up. How many things are on the list?
I love this.
11 projects for later this month.
All right, let's remove, how many are you on?
Three.
Let's start with
three. I think we can do three right now.
And I'm going to, of course, push us to five.
And that is how I married up.
We're going to just take five off right now.
All right, I moved one.
What was it?
We want to have a project to reevaluate our Glassdoor reviews and sort of take a look at those.
Yeah, it's gone.
Gone.
Cleaning up employee files.
Gone.
Cleaning up our applicant tracking system.
Gone.
So
it's
not
good
now.
Enough. You just hired 17 people. It's great people in an astonishing amount of time.
Yeah.
Systems are good enough.
And I'm going to remove, to the heartbreak of every employee, new swag.
You're going to have more time to pay attention to them and give them what they really need, which is your full focus.
That is amazing what you just did. It was amazing. And it took like 2 minutes. For this last one, let me show you what you might do with that to make it a win-win, which is to take it off the burden of your list and put it on the benefit of someone else's.
So, I don't know, your new hire?
Or either your new hire, or is there someone in the organization that is just like swagalicious?
It's me, but there will be there are others.
Yeah.
And she will be a perfect person. And I was thinking about, I can then also give her the budget.
Exactly.
To say, the
right.
Here's the budget.
Yes. There it is.
You can own it.
Yes. Yeah. And so that one really is a not now. You're going to wait until there's someone else swaggy. And this is going to be an awesome feature, not a bug, that they get to do. Now, here's the discipline. And again, it's not just discipline for you because you have to be a credible messenger to others. Not let these things creep back on to a future list because you want to leave time for the really pressing things. And I think the calculus that Anne did when she said, you just hired 17 people, your system is working fine. We often are looking to perfect systems that are already working fine. We do not have that luxury in resource-constrained environments. And the cost of perfection is that you're going to be working on less important things, but it will feel tidy.
And my addition to that would be the benefits of imperfection, which is psychically liberating, but I also think there's a very tangible benefit here, which is that if you remove the tension of this looming list and you really are, first of all, more present to excel in the things that remain, you just decided on this list, you took four off and there's seven remaining that were more important and now they're more likely to get your attention, the attention that they need for you to actually excel on the remaining seven. But you also get that energy back to focus on the humans around you and to be fully present to what they need in order to excel. Because now you just added plus one. And now your job has become like, how do I create the conditions for this other person to over-deliver? And she's going to need your help ruthlessly prioritizing her tasks.
Anne has a way of summarizing leadership, which is it's a practice of imperfect humans leading imperfect humans. And that is meant to be deeply liberating.
I love that. So true.
Caroline, how are you doing? Do you have a plan? Let's talk about what you're going to do differently when you show up for work next week.
I do. I like the ruthless prioritization. So in our senior leadership team, we always talk about, what are the top things each executive is going to tackle this week. And it will come to no surprise to you that those lists have gone from being the one thing that was sort of the intention to sort of now being three or four things that everyone's going to get done this week. And so I'm going to take the ruthless prioritization and sort of hold people to just what is the one most critical thing you're going to get done this week. And of course, you're going to do other things, but sort of what is the one needle mover that's really going to move the business forward this week.
Beautiful. I love that one.
Maybe even get them to articulate what are you going to abandon.
Yeah.
Thank you both so much. This was an honor and a pleasure.
This was an absolute pleasure on our end.
Thank you, Caroline. So, Frances, we didn't get all the way through our speed tricks. Let's knock them out in this debrief.
Yeah. So there was one final one that's in the hard category. And that is lean into conflict.
Mm, yes.
And so if we think about what's a speed bump in an organization, it's often that there's conflict. It's not the conflict that's the speed bump. It's the avoiding conflict that is the speed bump. So let me turn it back to you. What are ways to speed through that avoidance?
The great Leanne Davey calls it conflict debt on teams. We all know what tech debt is. So conflict debt is this tax that comes with you and often slows down communications and progress, and people who should be resolving issues by picking up the phone don't, or send formal emails. And this manifests in a bunch of different ways on teams. The case for the very simple discuss the undiscussable, as Chris Argyris would say, or hey, can we talk? You know, just putting on the line the kind of basics of here's my experience, like tell me about yours. It seems like we're getting stuck. Can we figure out a way through this? And the bar is not to have those conversations fearlessly, or to have those conversations without hesitation, or to have those conversations super gracefully or skillfully every time. It's literally just to be willing to have those conversations and step into the discomfort as of naming the tension or the conflict. And you can get 80% of the way. Now, if you want tactics on how to do that, there's many beautiful, timeless resources out there. I love the whole Crucial Conversation series. I love Kim Scott's Radical Candor work. You can go and get better at this, but really from where we're sitting, because we see this holding teams back every day, really what I want to say is just go get in there and make progress, and don't overthink the kind of skill set required to do this. Most of us have what we need to move productively through conflict.
And what I would say on the sort of what the value proposition to all of those beautiful words is that I can talk about a relatively small problem now, or I can wait a week and I have to talk about a much bigger problem.
So the degree of difficulty grows.
This thing just gets worse.
It's a great point.
When it's unaided.
Yeah, it's a great one. Thank you for listening. If you want to figure out your workplace problem with us here at Fixable, send us a message. Email us at fixable@ted.com or call us at 234-FIXABLE. That's 234-349-2253.
We're so grateful to everyone who has written, called, and texted. We couldn't make the show without you. Our team looks at every single submission, and even the ones that don't turn into full episodes, they help us uncover the issues that are most pressing in the workforce today. So to everyone, thanks for being part of the conversation. We look forward to talking with you soon.
Fixable is brought to you by the TED Audio Collective. It's hosted by me, Anne Morris.
And me, Frances Fry.
This episode was produced by Isabel Carter from Pushkin Industries. Our team includes Constanza Gallardo, Ban Ban Chang, Michelle Quint, Corey Hajim, Alejandra Salazar, and Roxanne High-Lash. This episode was mixed by Louie at StoryYard.
If you're enjoying the show, make sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and tell a friend to check us out.
And one more thing. Remember our episode with Carla Harris on mentorship, sponsors, and advisors? Well, we asked our Spotify listeners which of these relationships they are lacking in their own careers, and we wanted to share the results. 52% said they are in need of a mentor.
And the one that came in second place was the sponsor, which means we're advised up.
Yeah.
We have enough people giving us advice. We now need the two categories where people are acting in our best interests.
Yes.
That's what we need to learn how to cultivate.
Nice.